Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Big-time college football kicks off this week. Ohio State's considered a likely favorite to repeat as national champs. But another big storyline in the sport this year is a possible revival of one of the country's most storied football programs. The University of Michigan has more victories than any other school, but recent seasons have been kind of embarrassing for a school with such a big tradition. Last fall, the school fired its athletic director, Dave Brandon, and its coach, Brady Hoke. To bring back the glory, Michigan turned to a favorite son. Jim Harbaugh is coming home after a successful stint as an NFL coach.
I have to tell you that I have thought about that, dreamed about that since the time I was a young lad. And I have no other words to really describe how that feels, except to tell you that I have great excitement about the challenge of serving the University of Michigan as your football coach.
Journalist John Bacon writes about this saga in his new book, End Zone, The Rise, Fall, and Return of Michigan Football. He's with us now from Michigan Radio in Ann Arbor. John, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Lisa.
This is an amazing story. To appreciate what has happened to Michigan in the past decade, for those who don't know, I wonder if you could first tell us just how excited Michigan football fans are right now that that man we just heard from, Jim Harbaugh's return to lead the team as coach.
Well, you've read about the second coming, correct?
Well,
in Ann Arbor, it's about how it's been received with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind, as Harbaugh himself likes to say. I said earlier when he was contemplating the job that if he went to the Chicago Bears, the New York Jets, or the Oakland Raiders, he'd be well-received as a great coach. In Ann Arbor, he's the savior, and expectations are probably off the charts. But after being irrelevant for basically a decade in college football, to have the hottest coach in America come back to his alma mater makes everyone around Ann Arbor feel like they're irrelevant again.
Okay, and now one of the big things here is that Jim Harbaugh is a Michigan man. He was quarterback of the team when he was a player. He is even though he went to the NFL, he is a Michigan man. I wonder, for those who aren't, what does it mean?
Maybe too much. You might argue that. Rich Rodriguez, the previous coach two coaches ago, was not, and that was a problem for him. So it can be a very tight little club. Jim Harbaugh grew up as the ball boy for the football team. I'm not kidding you. His dad was an assistant coach in the 70s. So he grew up dreaming of playing and then coaching Michigan, as he just said. And now that dream has come true.
Okay, so your book is about a lot more than Jim Harbaugh. Let's go back to Dave Brandon, the athletic director who lost his job last year. He was indeed a Michigan man. He played football for the Wolverines. He did not make it so big in football, though. He sure did in business. What happened to him?
Good question there, of course, and kind of still a head-scratcher. This guy had played for Bo Schembechler, Harbaugh's coach. He'd been a regent at the University of Michigan, and by all accounts, he did a great job as the regent. So he understood the place as an academy. He was also the CEO of two Fortune 500 companies, including Domino's Pizza, which I'm sure all your listeners have heard of. His problem, I think, when he came to Ann Arbor as the AD in 2010 is he confused Domino's Pizza for the University of Michigan, and these places are not the same. There are limitations to the corporate approach.
But he was tapped by the president of University of Michigan at the time to come. What did she see in him, and what did he have to offer? What was going wrong that he was supposed to fix?
Well, as one of the, as Ted Spencer, the director of admissions at the time, told me, he said, she saw Dave as the alpha male. During regent meetings, if there's a problem, Dave could fix them. He got the suites pushed through for the football stadium. He was a very reliable ally of the president's, and this guy never really failed at anything other than Michigan football. So here he was. Honestly, everybody, including me, thought he was going to be a great success.
Well, he was pretty successful in the beginning. He had a lot more facilities built. He was very good at fundraising. He was especially good to student athletes. He would pretty much drop everything to meet with a student athlete if he had a problem. That was the good side, right?
No question. I don't think you'll find a better AD anywhere in the country for taking care of the student athletes like Dave Brandon did. And not just funding and facilities, but he would go to field hockey practice or gymnastics meet in Los Angeles to cheer them on. And they felt this. And one of the greatest examples in the book is Will Hoggerup, a punter for the team who had failed the drug test three times, marijuana twice, Adderall once, the ADD drug basically for studying. And that got him kicked off the team seemingly for good. But Dave stuck by him. Will got his act together, went to counseling and all this good stuff. And finally, honestly, against probably your better self-interest, Dave Brandon took him back. And when Will Hoggerup got up for the senior banquet this last year, he said, Michigan football has saved my life, and I have to thank Dave Brandon for that. That is Brandon at his best.
If Brandon was so devoted, though, to the student-athlete, on the other side, he seemed to turn on regular students. And there was a lot of inter-office politics that he was not very good at. Tell us what happened there.
I don't think Lisa even tried to be good at that, and that's the problem. He loved the student-athletes, and he catered to them, no question about it. But everyone else, he thought, were really not his problem. He did not recognize that, unlike Domino's Pizza, you've got more than one group of customers if you are the AD. And in this case, the students, of course, were very ticked off when he, without any warning, went from the usual reserved seating for students where you start as a freshman in the end zone, and by your senior year, you're pretty close to midfield. It is a rite of passage, if you will. All of a sudden, it went to general admission policy, and not only did you not get your 30-yard line seats as a senior, you might not get there in there at all, of course, and you couldn't sit with your friends. And that's the time-honored tradition, of course, of any college student, of course, is to sit with your friends. And that created a huge problem with the students, where the student tickets went from 20,000 in 2012 down to 10,000 in 2014. Lisa, I don't care what business you're running. If you lose half your future customers, you've got a problem.
All right. Well, the final straw for this man, Dave Brandon, was probably Michigan's game against Minnesota. This happened last fall. I think a lot of people, even those who may not be Michigan fans for whatever reason, will remember it. Michigan quarterback Shane Morris got hammered by one of the Minnesota defenders. The student got up. He was really groggy. He went to the sidelines. And despite a lot of public concerns about concussions and player safety, Coach Hoke put him back in the game. Now, we've got some sound here. This is the play-by-play from that part of the game with commentator Ed Cunningham, who cannot believe that this student, Morris, is going back into the game.
He can barely stand up. This is not good player management. We've talked about player safety in this game. Guys getting hit in the head. This is atrocious to me.
So why did they put this player back in the game? We should say it was Hoke, but I guess Dave Brandon had something to do with it, and he certainly took the fall for it.
He did. I've looked deeply into that situation. About four or five chapters of the book are devoted to that weekend, basically. And much to my surprise, when Shane Morris came to the bench, he was screaming about his ankle, not about getting hit in the head, which had been a problem for him the entire game, the ankle. And, of course, Hoke himself did not put him back in the game. The backup quarterback yelled that he could not find his helmet, and yelling at Shane Morris to jump in. Shane, on his own, did, in fact, jump in. It is somewhat a medical problem. He suffered a probable mild concussion, although I've seen worse. That's obviously serious. The real issue here, Lisa, was a PR problem, and that was the result of, out of 260 employees, when Dave Brandon took over, 143 were gone by the time that game came around, including 54 years of PR experience, a 41-year experienced equipment manager who always had the backup quarterback's helmet in a student manager's hand. So the whole thing, like Hurricane Katrina, all came crashing down over this one situation, but the fact was the safeguards had been removed one by one by one. PR, lettermen, employees, all these safeguards had been removed, and all of a sudden that alone is enough to make the whole thing blow up.
Had he laid them off or they jumped ship?
Resignations in quotations is what I called them, of course, including many buyouts. He bragged when he took the job. He was going to get rid of 100 people, and he got rid of 143. And the two PR guys he got rid of were whizzes at handling crisis management. The old line from the old AD, Don Canham, was never turn a one-day story into a two-day story, and those guys knew how to take the medicine and get it over with. In this case, the person in charge had been on the job for 2 days, and she was in charge of development. She'd never done PR before in her life. So it was not really her fault, but she was utterly ill-equipped to handle this. She did not know they had a problem until Sunday night when they finally had a press release go out.
Okay, so Dave Brandon resigns. The coach, Brady Hoke, is fired after Michigan loses to arch rival Iowa, Ohio State, that is. And bring in now, just in the final minute we have left, Jim Harbaugh. Michigan man comes back, lured from San Francisco. He had brought the 49ers to the Super Bowl. How'd they get him back in Michigan, and what's his job ahead?
This, Lisa, is one of the great feel-good stories of all time when they had the Letterman put together a calling circle of about 35 great Michigan players that Jim admired as a ball boy growing up, certainly part of his teammates as well, and then guys like Charles Woodson and, in your backyard, Tom Brady. And how you get Tom Brady, by the way, Lisa, is not his PR man or his publicist or the New England Patriots. A 43-year-old dishwasher from Pizza House named Jay Flannelly, one of Tom Brady's best friends to this day, he put Tom Brady in touch with Jim Harbaugh for 2 hours on the phone. At that point, Harbaugh could not say no.
John Bacon's new book is called End Zone, The Rise, Fall, and Return of Michigan Football. There's an excerpt at hereandnow.org. Nice to speak with you.
Lisa, thank you.